Welcome back. Those of you who listened to this program yesterday remember our chat with Maggie Duckworth. She's one of 100 candidates who hopes to be among 24 chosen for the Mars mission, that one-way trip to Mars to colonize the red planet. She is from the St. Louis area. Our next guest is Dr. Michael Mahan. He's a trained clinical psychologist who now works as a licensed professional counselor. And he's a science fiction buff who has also given some thought to being psychologically ready for that Mars mission. I spoke with Dr. Mahan earlier this week, and he admits to taking science fiction seriously, even while many others do not.
I can't not take it seriously. I was 13 when Star Wars came out. I remember one of the very first programs that I ever watched on television was Star Trek. So this was something that I was ripe for. I was a young child watching the Apollo missions launch. So I don't know how not to take it seriously, but I also take it seriously because I believe that people who are actively aware of what could be possible are psychologically more flexible than people who aren't.
Could you just delve into that a little bit more? What precisely do you mean by that?
So if you think about people who like science fiction, who are science fiction fans, their entire mentality is about the what if. Why couldn't this happen? What if this happened? For people who aren't into science fiction, it doesn't mean that they aren't capable of that train of thinking, but they don't routinely engage in it. So people who are into science fiction, who are science fiction fans, tend to be more psychologically flexible than people who are not.
You know, I have to say this, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but a lot of people think that people who are really into it are sort of nerdy.
Yes. And that's obviously the perception that we have, and it is obviously promoted through the media, through shows like The Big Bang Theory. Do you watch The Big Bang Theory?
No.
Okay. So it's obviously a show about guys who are very, very intelligent but who have very, very little social acumen. So that is the perception that people who are highly intelligent or who are into science fiction lack the ability to be socially connected to other human beings. I personally don't believe that that's true. I believe I am capable of being attached to other human beings. But I think that that's a false perception, but it is popularized. And that's another reason why I believe that being a representative of somebody who is very socially connected but also likes science fiction is important.
Well, I think the fact that The Big Bang Theory was so very, very popular would indicate that most people don't mind nerds.
Right. Well, we don't mind nerds as much as we think that we do, although obviously, you know, growing up in high school, you know, when things are very clicked and very, very regimented into, you know, square pegs, round holes and such, the nerds are looked down on as the least popular group. I think that they tend to hold their own as they grow up and get really lucrative, good-paying jobs.
You have been quoted as saying that you believe that science fiction will take us to the next stage of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. I'll ask you to explain that as well.
Well, obviously people who are into science fiction are the people who are thinking about what we are going to be like in the future and who are actually creating the foundation for that future. But I believe that people who are science fiction fans tend to be individuals who are more psychologically flexible. These are individuals who think about the what if and the why not, and they aren't limited in their thinking because someone says, oh, no, you can't do that. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but originally when the United States was doing its first flight test for breaking the sound barrier, there were all kinds of very eloquent mathematical equations about why a plane could not fly faster than sound. And it wasn't the people who thought that in the conservative that were willing to push that envelope. It was the people who were saying to themselves, well, why can't we do that? What if we did that, that we're able to eventually break the sound barrier? So these are individuals who are pushing us forward and motivating us, and they're going to lay the foundation for our evolutionary development.
Chuck Yeager wasn't listening to those folks.
He certainly was not, and a good thing he wasn't.
Okay. Let's talk for a moment about Mars One.
Mm-hmm.
this is science fact, not science fiction. What do you make of this project and the people who have chosen to become involved for the flight?
Well, we say the idea of it is science fact. Actual ability to go to Mars may or may not be science fact. When we think about how much money was spent on the Mars rovers that are there now, I mean, Sojourn back in 97, Opportunity and Spirit in the early 2000s, both of those original rovers cost almost $1 billion. The most recent rover, Curiosity, was $2.5 billion. That's to take a robot, and that's with existing flight technology. They already had the rockets to send these projects to the Red Planet. And so the ability to be able to send a man or a crew of men and women to Mars and the resources for them to be able to build a habitation, to be able to survive on the face of the planet, is going to be a very big endeavor. So the idea of it is science fact. Whether the technology proves out to be science fact or science fiction remains to be seen. As far as the people, you know, when I'm obviously trained clinical psychologist and do psychotherapy for a living, and when we think about Carl Jung and the archetypes that Carl Jung talked about, some of the archetypes that were prominent in his thinking were the idea of the character, so the hero, the villain, things like that, and then some act, so the journey, the fall. And individuals who want to see themselves as heroic and take a great journey, this is a common theme throughout human mythology. And so it doesn't surprise me. I mean, you know, a lot of the Mars 100 talked about this idea of, you know, why did people cross the ocean in the 1500s? And a lot of those individuals didn't think that they were coming back. Those were one-way trips. And those individuals did that because they saw themselves as heroic characters who were going on a great journey. And the individuals who are willing to sign up for Mars One are similar in their thinking, and that's a great thing. Now, the question is the reality of that the same as the romanticized idea of that?
Well, the first people who crossed the Atlantic didn't do so knowing they were going to die when they got wherever they were going.
No, they didn't. And that is exactly why no large states have actually engaged in this endeavor, because this, you know, if the United States were going to send a mission to Mars, the only way that they would do that is if they were going to bring those individuals home. And I think psychologically there is a real good reason why we want to bring those people home. Let's assume that Mars One works and you have individuals, however many they eventually send, whether it's 4, 8, 12, 16, in four-man crews, and that they are able to survive for any amount of time on the face of Mars. What is that going to do for individuals here on Earth? And the response is probably not a lot. I mean, if you imagine if we had sent the Apollo astronauts to the moon and they had never come home, our understanding of what space travel is and why we want to do it would be very different.
Right. And it would have put back the space program forever and ever.
Absolutely.
How would you counsel people who are finally selected to make this trip?
The thing that I would be concerned about, I mean, there are obvious things. Number one, are they going to spin the spacecraft? Is there going to be any gravity? We don't know what the effects of zero gravity are going to be long term on a human being. If you break a bone, you know, a lot of studies would say that your bones aren't going to mend in zero gravity. So that's the, you know, one thing. Another thing is the radiation. How do we shield from that? But if you just think strictly psychologically, what we know is that individuals in isolation, individuals in stimulus deprivation environments go insane and they die. So if either one of us were to isolate ourselves, even for a short period of time, not as even as much as 96 hours, we would begin to show the basic symptoms of psychosis, the inability to interpret reality accurately. So this is going to be a big problem for people on these Mars expeditions. These are limited man crews, four-man crews. The probability that all four individuals are going to make it to the planet safely is infinitesimally small. And as you start to get fewer and fewer individuals that you have access to, it's going to have a direct impact on the psychology of those individuals. And that would be the big issue for me. So what I would be wanting to say to people is, let's think about, you know, you can train for that on Earth, but you have the expectation you're coming out of the simulator and you're going to be back in society. If you're going to go to Mars on a one-way trip, that's going to be a very different thing. So what I'm going to want to do with those individuals is to, as they're going through their training, train them to be able to be self-contained and to be able to be okay with that.
What kind of person is it, you think, that makes this decision to go? I mean, if you had to draw a profile, what would be the characteristics that you would look for if you were making the choice?
Well, obviously you want individuals who have some kind of technical skill, and I know that that was one of the criteria for selection here. And so that would be the foundation. You've got to have people who are value added to the mission. And then the next thing is you need to have individuals who are capable of being adaptable. So they have to be able to react in a very calm and neutral way to a changing situation, because there are going to be any number of things both that we can anticipate, but a lot more things that we can't anticipate that are going to happen on this voyage. So the individuals that I'm looking for are the individuals who have that ability to be adaptable, who are able to face the changing situation in a calm way and be able to respond to that with forethought without just having to react out of a fear mechanism.
And yet you indicate that a number of people would not survive the trip, if I understood you correctly. That is something that would require a very special kind of attitude, I would think, knowing that my chances are slim of successfully getting there.
Right. So these individuals are individuals. So if you think about Carl Jung and you think about the archetypes that Carl Jung talked about, he talked about characters like, you know, the hero, the villain, an event like the journey or the fall. And these are individuals who see themselves in a heroic way, who are going to make this great journey. So for these individuals, it actually is the journey that is important, not whether or not they make it to Mars, not whether or not they survive on Mars. Now, that's very different for us here at home. So the individuals who are going to Mars are going for different reasons than is important for us here back on Earth. For us back on Earth, this is one of the concerns that I have. The United States would not be investing money in a mission like this unless they could bring those individuals home. This is a one-way trip. Now, regardless of how you or I feel about the idea of a one-way trip, my concern is that we send these individuals out into the void and that something happens and we don't hear from them again. And what if we do that two or three times, that we send human beings out into the void and they disappear and we never hear from them? That is going to change our perception of space travel greatly from what it is currently. And I think that that has the potential of having a far more devastating impact on us than if we had not made the attempt to begin with.
Would you make that trip?
Well, Don, I'm 50. And if they're not going to fly for 10 years, then I would be 60. I would like to sit here at 50. I would tell you that, yes, I would make that trip. In 10 years, would I make that trip? I don't know. I could be a very different person in 10 years. But sitting here right now, my heart tells me that I would want to make that trip.
One of the things that occurs to me, I think the probably the most perplexing part of it is the thought of dying on the planet Mars, but also of leaving loved ones behind, knowing that this is your ultimate fate.
Right.
So?
Well, that would be the – if I didn't go, I am married, I have two children, and that would probably – if there was a factor that would prohibit me from going, that would be it. I can't imagine that my wife or my children, even though my children are grown and take care of themselves, that they would be in favor of me getting on board a spacecraft and disappearing into the black and never returning. So that would be a very, very difficult thing to do. So again, my motivation for doing that is going to be very, very different than the motivation of the people who are going to be left behind. And I think that's something that we need to be able to understand and to take into consideration. The motivation of the individuals who are willing to go on a trip like this are very, very different than the motivation of the individuals who are going to stay here on Earth.
Another aspect of it that I would find most disturbing would be the loneliness factor. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got a total of 24 people, I think, that will populate the colony if it all happens. That's not a whole lot of people. They're from all different parts of the world.
Right.
Language would probably be a factor at some point, but it would have to be extraordinarily lonely.
Well, not only lonely, but if we think about the ability – I'm not a geneticist, so I want to say that up front. But if we think about the viability of the colony, 24 human individuals is not enough to start a whole new human race. And so if the idea is that you're sending individuals there to start a colony, I'm not sure the number 24 makes a lot of sense. But again, yes, you're to answer your initial query about loneliness, yes, they are going to be lonely. There are going to be profound psychological impacts on these individuals. None of us alive today on the face of this planet can say with any confidence that we understand the psychological implications of being on Mars in a group of 24, in a group of 12, or in a group of 4.
How do you think they would be told to handle that?
Well, my idea would be to try and train these individuals to be as comfortable with being alone as possible. Now, what we know is that biologically, your body is not constructed to be alone. Individuals who live in isolation eventually show symptomology of psychosis, the inability to judge reality accurately, and even die. So that is a real concern for me, but to the extent that we are capable, I would be wanting to train these individuals to be able to be as self-contained as possible. So things like yoga, tai chi, deep muscle relaxation, things that train you, Zen meditation, things that train you to empty your mind and be comfortable with your own body are activities that are going to be essential for any person who's going to make this trip.
For a science fiction aficionado, if I may put it that way, I get the impression that you're not really too keen on this whole project.
I believe that this is necessary. This is a necessary step. I believe that the privatization of space travel is going to be the future. I'm not against the idea of this as a project. I remain skeptical about the viability, knowing how much has been spent by governments on space exploration. The idea, and I think, is it $8 billion that they're thinking about?
Something like that.
Is just, to me, the math of that just doesn't work out, and especially with off-the-shelf technology that we currently possess. Now, if they pull it off and they end up on Mars and the habitats all work and people live and they do a reality TV show and beam it back to Earth, I guarantee you I'm going to be DVR in that TV show.
About the habitat itself, what do you know about that and what do you think about that and how they would be receiving it?
Well, the habitat, this is probably the most substantial technology that we currently have. We know the habitat will work. That's not the issue. And we know that that if we can get it to Mars and get it set up, that a person could survive inside of the habitat. Now, whether or not that means that they can grow their own food or be able to produce their own oxygen, that is maybe not – it's not a guarantee, but the technology is sound. I do question the ability to get it to Mars and get it to Mars in an operational state.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people feel exactly the way you do. But what a sensation it would be if we looked up there and thought that there are 24 people living there.
It would change the world.
And that's what the people going want to be a part of, which in and of itself bespeaks a special type.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you'd want to add about this whole prospect?
this is the future of the human race. I think that when we think about space travel, I'm not sure what the different people assign different numbers to it, but space travel has returned more to the human economy of all countries that have engaged in it than any other single human activity. So the idea of doing this is fundamentally sound. If they can pull it off, I will be the first one to cheer. But it is the future, and we need to get behind these kinds of programs because they do return to the United States, to the planet, a tremendous amount.
But why is it the future of the human race?
Well, I mean, depending on the timescale that you're looking at, eventually the planet can't sustain all of the people that are on it, right? So, I mean, it's the future of the human race if we want to continue to have babies at the current rate that we're having them, if we want to continue to do damage to the environment the way that we're doing it. Ultimately, if the sun explodes, now I tend to wonder if the sun explodes and the Earth is consumed, whether or not Mars will be a safe place.
Sure.
But the point being that we have to be able to get off of this planet to be able to survive long term.
Clinical psychologist Dr. Michael Mahan on space travel and science fiction. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk about Metro Theater Company's production of Afflicted Daughters of Salem, the Chamber Music Society of St. Louis's concert honoring David and Maron Halen, and local screenings of the film Marshall the Miracle Dog. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and Erica Smith, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Katie Cook, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.